couple more minutes with Dr. Daniel Levitin, Bill Russell, I, Paula Gordon, Dr. Dan, the music man, as well as being a neuroscientist. One of the things that I found really helpful was to again see cited that it takes 10,000 hours if you're going to master something. We have friends in the music business, in the music world, which is also a business, who say, if you can do anything else, don't be a professional musician. Go find another way to make yourself happy. This notion of mastery is also very important as you're thinking both about neuroscience and about music, isn't it?
I think to be a world-class anything, whether you're talking about a chess player or a broadcast journalist or an artist or an athlete, takes a lot of preparation. And it doesn't mean that if you put in the 10,000 hours, you'll make it. But there aren't any cases on record of somebody achieving real world-class mastery in any field that we care about in less than 10,000 hours. I mean, I say field that we care about because I guess I could become an expert at folding my arms in less than 10,000 hours, but that doesn't seem to count.
The counter-argument always is Mozart, and you address that.
Right, so we need to distinguish here true expertise from precociousness. So a lot of kids demonstrate an early ability that is mind-boggling, but that doesn't mean that they're experts. It only means that they may potentially be. So as a thought experiment, if Mozart were to have died at the age of 11, would we know who he was? I don't think so. Because those early musical works, although they promised much that might come later, they weren't in and of themselves extraordinary.
If he hadn't had a dad who was the best music teacher in Europe who pushed him really hard.
Don't forget that.
Well, we're back to context again.
Yeah, but the early works, although it's exceptional that a kid wrote them, I should mention that it's largely believed that his father helped him with those early works.
And it wasn't four, it was six. And
right. Picasso's another good example. You can see Picasso's early drawings are on a traveling exhibit. And as a 10-year-old, he did amazing drawings. But if he had died at the age of 11, those drawings wouldn't be hanging in a museum. They'd be of interest to people like myself who study the psychology of childhood or the psychology of creativity. But they weren't in and of themselves the work of an expert or a master. They were only advanced for his age.
Which also says to me, if one has kids or is around kids or influencing young people, don't get stuck in a rut. Don't make them be a baseball player if, in fact, the cello is calling them. And if they'd rather be making mud pies, maybe they'll invent the newest something or other.
Well, that's such an important point, is that you can't push the child. You need to encourage and give the child some structure. But you can't push the child into something they don't want. Arthur Rubinstein, the great pianist, was forced to play the violin by his father at the age of 3 and 4 and 5, and he kept smashing the violins as a child, saying that he wanted a piano, and the father finally gave him a piano.
And he couldn't break it quite as readily.
He wanted the piano, that's the point.
Yeah.
You also make, I don't want this hour to end without what to me is a very important point that you come back to and back to and back to, which is that we are all expert in music.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have it in our set, in our minds, that they're the experts, the people who know music, who studied music, who've done music theory, who stand on stages and, or teach it or whatever. And you give the lie to that.
To the extent that we know the name Noam Chomsky, it's because of this one big idea he had in the 50s that we're all experts at our own language. We can all speak by the age of 5. We can detect sentences that are malformed or that don't make sense. That's why young kids like the Jabberwocky so much, because they recognize that it's wrong. And similarly with music, we are all expert music listeners. Without any explicit instruction, we all learn to sing. We don't all learn to become Ella Fitzgerald.
Even if you can't carry a tune, you can sing.
That's right. And we learn it just by osmosis, by exposure.
Whatever our culture.
That's right. And some of us do become great experts, but the point is that we all develop this knowledge of music implicitly. Any 5-year-old can tell you when there's a chord that's out of sequence or a note that's out of tune. And there is this whole other path of development that some people do become experts. But we see that in speech, too. There are great orators like Dr. Martin Luther King, like Barack Obama, Edward R. Murrow. People become professional talkers. But all of us have some expertise in talking, just as people become professional singers, professional violinists, but all of us really have some expertise in listening. We're all expert listeners.
I want to end where you are in the middle of This Is Your Brain on Music with Crick. When he says to you, walking out the door, the last thing, this is Crick of Watson and Crick of DNA getting understood, taken apart, the great chain of life being really understood for the first time. When he said to you, remember the connections, think about the connections. I kept thinking all the way through This Is Your Brain on Music about the connections, the human animal, the social nature of the human animal. Music, brains, all of this is about connections, isn't it?
It is. And what Crick was referring to was something that was quite extraordinary. I had been working for 10 years as a neuroscientist, and I had the chance to meet him, and he asked about my work. He was a very generous man. This was just a few months before he died. And I had, like many people, sort of gotten so absorbed in my work, I had lost the forest for the trees. And I was looking at this one little area of the brain and this other little area of the brain and what they were doing in response to music and trying to spin the story. And he asked a very simple question. Are those two areas connected? Could they be communicating with each other? And that set me off on a... Oh my God, it's so obvious. Why was I thinking only about the cartography and not about the roots of connections between them? Now, of course, we can talk about connections in the larger sense, our connection to one another, our connection to our culture, our connection to music and the way that music is connected to other musics and the people who write it are connected in a never-ending chain of you know, musical history. Everything we hear today is somehow connected to Bach, any Western music anyway, and that really is a sense of emergence again, where through these connections comes a larger intelligence or something larger than would be predicted by looking just at the pieces.
Come back when we'll talk more about the music of the spheres. We thank you, Daniel Levitin.
Thank you.
The music and the science are equally inviting when Daniel Levitin presents his ideas in This Is Your Brain on Music and The World in Six Songs. We thank him for sharing his delights in both arenas, in these books, and here with us. I'm Paula Gordon. I wish you well.